Good evening.
Good evening.
It is good being with you once again. I welcome you with all my heart. I love you all unconditionally, for I can do nothing else but to love you. Love is another word for the self. The self is all-pervading. The self is consciousness. The self is absolute reality. Therefore, when I say I love you, the I, which is consciousness, absolute reality, the love, which is also consciousness, absolute reality, come together into oneness. There's only one. One love, one consciousness, one I. What I'm really saying is I love the self. I am that. We're not talking about Robert. Robert seems to be a bag of skin with bones and organs and blood circling, which is here today and gone tomorrow. But the self is omnipresence, omniscience, omnipotence. And I am is that. When you look at me, what do you see? You see an elderly gentleman. I know I'm a gentleman. You see an elderly fart sitting here talking to you, telling you nonsense. But I can assure you I am not that. I am not what most of you see. I am that I am. Again, when I speak the words I am not speaking of Robert. I tell you truthfully, there is no Robert. Most of you see a Robert, but I tell you in truth, there is no Robert. Robert never existed. There is no Robert that was born and prevails and then disappears. There is only the one consciousness, only the one absolute reality. And I am is that. It is like newspaper and the print on a newspaper. When most of you read a newspaper, you do not see the paper, you see the print. Without the paper in the background, there can be no print. But most of us have forgotten about the paper and we only see the print. We're involved with the print. Whereas when I look at the newspaper, I see the substratum. The paper itself and the print is meaningless. And so it is with consciousness. Just as the print is superimposed on the paper and we become involved in the print, so it is with the human body. The human body would not appear by itself if there were no consciousness. Consciousness is a substratum. The human body appears to be superimposed on consciousness. Most human beings are involved in the human world, in the relative world, the material world. We forget about the paper, or the substratum. Which is eternal bliss, absolute reality, effortless pure awareness. And as we grow older, we become deeply involved in the world, deeper and deeper, and that's all we know. We see the world as it is. But again, the world in itself does not exist. The universe does not exist by itself. It is Brahman, consciousness, that exists as the world. Therefore, when someone asks you, is the world real? You answer, the world by itself is unreal. For by itself it has no foundation. But the world is Brahman and it is real. Just as if someone asks you, when you look at the newspaper, is the print real? The print by itself is unreal, for it has no substance. It needs the newspaper as a background to put the print on. The same is true of consciousness in the world. As you begin to understand this, you begin to identify less and less with persons, places, and things. And the deeper you go within, as you identify with the substratum of all existence, or consciousness, you seem to become happier and happier. You become more peaceful. There are many people who say, Advaita Vedanta is useless and fruitless. What makes you want to leave everything and go to a monastery or go to a cave and not be involved in this world at all, because you begin to understand that the world is not real, it doesn't exist by itself. This is true and also not true. There are certain beings, certain people, when they attain illumination, awakening. And it's true, they want to be alone. They want to be by themselves. After all, they realize they're the self of the universe. They have realized that they are Brahman. So there really is no aloneness for them. They realize that they are the consciousness of the entire universe. And the whole universe is superimposed on them. So wherever they go, whatever they do, they are infinite reality. Yet there are many others who continue with their work, with their families, with whatever they were doing before. The only difference is they have attained total bliss and total joy. They have attained illumination. And the world no longer frightens them, causes them any pain, and they do not have experiences like most people do. Yes, very paradoxical. For when you look at such people, they appear to be people like yourself. This is a paradox. While they're in the body, they eat, they sleep. They do all the things that you do. The one difference is they realize they are not the doer. They are totally happy, filled with bliss and peace and joy. This answers the question that most people ask. What good is attaining illumination? It appears that I'll lose everything that I have and want to run away someplace and live by myself. Again, this is true for some people, not true for others. But the thing that I want you to understand is that you become total joy. Why should you work towards awakening? For when you do, you will no longer be the one you think you are. You will no longer be a man or a woman, a human being, a world, or a god, or anything. You will just no longer be. Yet the paradox is, when people look at you, you will appear to them as you were before. They will see nothing different. Yet to the one who has realized, knows for sure, for certain, that he or she is not a body or a mind. The question is asked, how can you say there's no body when I can see, feel, touch, hear, and smell this person? The answer is, who touches, who feels, who smells, who sees. The senses do not exist to an enlightened individual. The senses exist to the one who does the same. So from your viewpoint, from your perspective, you are seeing a human being due to the fact that you think of yourself as a human being. Therefore, you're only going to see yourself. What you are, you see in others. This is the reason, again, I said in the beginning, I love you unconditionally. Because the surface of you does not faze me. But I see you as the self. There's no difference between you and me. The only difference there appears to be, for some reason, is that I realize I am not the print. I am the newspaper, the paper, without the news. Whereas you think you are the news and the print. That's why you talk so much. You're spreading news. Where you think you are news. When one starts to go into the self, deeper and deeper within, and finally reaches an awakening, that one becomes the whole universe. This is what awakening is. Awakening is not selfish. There are some people who still believe that you awaken to a greater and bigger personality. Some people actually believe that you awaken to a gigantic ego. When you're able to do all kinds of miracles and perform all kinds of feats, again, let me remind you, there has to be someone left to do those things. When you awaken, the personal self has been destroyed. There's no one to have cities, no one to perform miracles, no one to be clairvoyant, no one to tell fortunes. All that has been completely annihilated. And only the substratum remains. And again, when you say, well, this Yanni looks just like I do. He eats, he sleeps, does everything that I do. Why is he or she different? It is like a dream. You are living in a dream world, and the awakened one is not. Everything you say, everything you do, everything you see, everything you feel, is from your point of view. You can only see truth to the level that you have risen yourself. What you are is what you see. As long as you're still feeling conditions, your feelings become hers. You're able to look at people and judge them. You feel the world pressing in on you. You see others as reality. You have not arrived yet. You're not cooked. When you're totally cooked, everything becomes like a movie. You realize your body, that appears to be a body, is also part of the movie. But you are aware that you have no body. You never had a body. Even when you were not a little mind, there was no body. Only you're able to see that now. And you become all-pervading, omnipresent. But for the average person, as far as they are concerned, if they ask you, why should I practice self-inquiry? Why should I practice the Veda Vedanta principles? Simply answer and say, because you will become happier than you've ever been in your life. You will become happy just the way you are. Without things or with things, without people or with people, without work or with work. It doesn't make any difference what stage the world is going through, whether it's the Dark Ages or the Golden Age. You will always be the same. Even-minded. And total peace. Pure joy. This is the reason we try to become a Lumine. That's how you talk to people who ask you these questions. The world in itself becomes nonsensical when you look at it through the eyes of a Yani. How can we take the world to be real? First of all, everything changes from day to day. All through the ages, we have man's inhumanity to man. We have cataclysms. All kinds of things take place on this earth. People die by the millions, people are born by the millions, people come and go. Animals come and go. Cities come and go. Countries come and go. How can you take this to be real? most people don't even like to think about these things. It's so mind-boggling. Just to think that you're not the same person you were when you were born, that you grow older and older, then you seem to disappear. That alone should make you think and wonder if there's any reality to hold on to, if there's anything that does not change. Unfortunately, Maya works in such a way that when we're young, we don't seem to care about these things. When we're teenagers, all we want to do is have fun. This is the way of Maya, to befuddle you, to keep you in darkness, to make you believe the body and the fears are real. To very few young people who become involved in this kind of teaching. To very few old people become involved in this kind of teaching. To very few people become involved in this teaching. Sometimes, when life pushes you around and the rug is pulled from under you, that's when the average person gets involved in a teaching like this. They say there must be something else. But blessed is a young person who gets involved in this kind of a teaching just because they've realized that the world gets you nowhere. Think of the reason why you got involved in this teaching. What were you looking for? It is most interesting when people get involved in a teaching like this from the beginning. They do so because they want to improve their affairs. They want to either get healthy, they've been sickly. They want to get rich. They want companionship. They want something. They want to improve their affairs. So they get involved in a teaching like this. If they can take it for a while and go through the teaching, the day will come when they're no longer interested in attaining anything. Yet everything always works out for them in the right way. They no longer have an interest in improving their humanhood. They come to the conclusion that they have to transcend their humanhood to become free. Whereas when you're involved in metaphysical movements, you try to improve your humanhood. To what avail? Gets you nowhere. The wise person begins to realize at an early age that there is nothing permanent in this world but change. Begins to search, goes through many paths, usually begins with their own religion, then they may get involved in yoga, spirituality, then they become bhaktas. They surrender. And surrender leads to jnana. Leads to oneness. You begin your jnana training by trying to find the source of the I. Concentrating on the source of the I. Therefore, you pick a place which is usually on the right side of the chest. And this is where the source or God, or realization, lives. And you try to follow the I thought. You see where it goes, what it does. The best time to do this is in the morning, when you have your first thoughts. You try to catch the I thought as you awaken. You do this by inquiring, to whom does the I come? Realizing all the time, when the I thought goes from the heart to the brain, the body belief becomes prevalent. When the body becomes prevalent in your mind, then you begin to see other bodies, and the universe becomes factual. Everything appears. All this happens instantaneously. This is why it is sort of difficult to catch it. Yet if you persist, you'll be able to do it. As soon as you awaken, before you're able to think, the I thought has left the center of the heart, which is the source, has flown to the brain. You become cognizant of your body. Then you become cognizant of other bodies and to the world and the universe. All this happens instantaneously. That's why you have to inquire, to whom does this come? When you say that to yourself in the morning, you're actually saying, to whom does this universe appear? To whom does the body appear? To whom does this world appear? To whom do others appear? Then you realize that I see this. It is the I that beholds the appearance. In other words, I am that I am, but I am not the personal I that appears. Then who am I? When you say the words, who am I? A reversal begins. By reversal, I mean the I, the personal I, goes back from the brain into the self, into God, at the right side of the chest. When that happens, you are liberated. Therefore, the whole practice is to catch the eye thought as it goes back into the chest, into the source, into the self. Then only the self will appear. Everything else will disappear. This is the work you do. This is a job you have. Yet no matter how many times I say this to you, most people will not do it. They either think they're too busy, they don't have the time, or they believe they can't do this self-inquiry. Yet this is not true. It can really be done by anybody if they will take the time and the effort to try it without giving up in a couple of days. I know many of you have tried for a day or two and have told me that everything happens so fast. I get up and I become aware of the world immediately. But I say to you again, if you persevere, the day is going to come when you awaken. It has to. This is really the fastest and the easiest way to awaken. I will explain it again. It's easy. Begin to practice tomorrow morning when you get out of bed. When you go to sleep tonight, tell yourself, when you get up in the morning, you will immediately think of the source, the self, which abides on the right side of the chest. If you tell yourself this before you go to sleep, you will awaken with the thoughts that follow. As soon as you open your eyes, before you become conscious of yourself, inquire, who am I? When you inquire, who am I, you are really asking, what is the source of the I? And keep still. As soon as something comes into your mind, the body, ask, inquire, to whom does this come? In other words, you are inquiring, you're asking, where did my body come from? I wasn't aware of the body when I was sleeping. But now I am aware of this body. Where did it come from? That's what it means when you inquire, to whom does this come? Where did my body come from? You try to become still as long as possible. Then of course it comes to you. Why this comes to me? I feel the body. Remember what this means also when you make that statement. You are in reality saying that the I thought feels this body phenomena. The I thought feels it, not me, but the I. The real you does not feel this. The I feels this. Therefore you inquire again, then to whom does this come? To whom does the I come? And again you realize, it comes to me, I feel this. Then you can say, then who am I? In other words, you are asking yourself, who is this I thought? What is the source of the I thought? And keep still. If you can go this far in the morning when you get up, you've come a long way. If you're able to do this alone, you have come a long way. The secret is to persevere. Do not do it one day or 2 days or a week or a month. Who knows how long it will take? But do not think of this. Do not wonder when it's going to happen, when you're going to awaken. Just do it. Make it part of your daily routine. It's just like when you were a little kid, you had to learn the multiplication table. And then when you woke up in the morning, you recite the multiplication table. Until you had it down packed. This is the same thing. Keep inquiring. And the day will come when you become liberated. For liberation is your very nature. You are that. And all is well. Feel free to ask questions.
Oh, but I don't know how clear this question will come. You're saying that in the morning, the eye comes from the heart and it goes up to the brain, and you say, and the world is cognized and your body is cognized, and you're also saying it's instantaneous. Does that mean it's fast or really instantaneous? I mean, is there time for you to question what's happening, or does the question come really afterwards?
The question slows down the procedure.
But by the time you're questioning, that's already happened. The words
are yes.
So the question comes after the
question. That's why you question.
Got it. Thank you.
If it happened immediately and you were able to follow, you wouldn't need to question.
Mm-hmm.
There would be no need for you to question. The only reason you're questioning is because it's happened. If you were able to catch it, there would be nobody left to question. For by catching it, the axle, which is the ego, has returned to the heart.
So it's to remind yourself to question it.
As you question it.
Okay, so this is kind of a hypothetical question. Supposing someone was standing next to your bedside and you can tell exactly when you're waking up, and supposing at that second they say, well, tell yourself the question, would that wake you, kind of remind you to do that? Like if you had a gramophone that starts playing at the moment.
It would happen too fast. The relationship between the ego and the self happens so fast that before you turn on the gramophone, you're already the ego. You have become the ego.
Okay.
So you question and inquire, to whom does it come? Again, remember, if you were able to catch it, then you've become liberated. And there's no need to question anything. You question because you believe you are the body. You question because you believe there are other bodies. And you're living in a world. That's why you question. If you were able to catch it, there would be no need to question.
Because you would recognize it then.
You would be that. You would become pure being, the self. All the questioning, all the sadness are for the ego. All the spiritual practices are for the ego. Self-inquiry is for the ego.
We don't have to worry or think about fortune teller or people with authority and all, so on and so forth. What would you say then, or make any comment about, for instance, like Nostradamus, that he can see the future? He can see body moving, making, you know, activity and so on and so forth. Or would you say that he can read people's mind? Or, for instance, sometimes you feel like you're talking to, you know, some person, and you would have some kind of instinct or some feeling of what they were just about to say. What do you have a comment on that?
This is part of the occult practices. Your real self has no beginning, no end, no past, and no future. When you look into the future, you are at a mental level. This has to do with the mind. And this is all changeable. For instance, somebody tells you a future and tells you you're going to be rich and become a millionaire in 1986. When 1986 come around, you become a millionaire. But he didn't tell you that you have to pay taxes, and you do not pay your taxes, and they put you in jail, and then you lose all your money, and all kinds of things happen to you. They just told you the future that you're going to be a millionaire. Anything in the occult, fortune-telling, futures, past, this is all nonsense. What you want to do is go beyond that. When you're looking to the future, you believe that you're a human being. You believe you're a person. And if you're a person, you're going to have all kinds of experiences. Good experiences, bad experiences, all kinds of experiences. Nostradamus saw the future. What good did it do? Nostradamus was able to predict Hitler and what would happen to the Jews and everything else. What good did it do? It didn't stop anything. He was just able to see what was going to happen. Some of the things he saw were right, some of the things he saw were wrong. But what good is this? We're not interested in to see what's going to happen. We want to get off the world. We want to transcend the world, transcend the body, rise above conditions, rise above things, and become completely and totally free and liberated. Then we're in a different category. We're in a completely different category. We have become the entire universe. We're no longer a body. You're no longer a seer. It's gone. Disappeared. You are a God. You have become the absolute reality. So predictions of the future are a waste of time. Fortune-telling psychics, it's a waste of time.
Well, I don't mean to get, you know, contemplating that, you know, that something that they predicted would be happening or so on and so forth. What I'm asking was, though, is possible that human mind, you know, ego, different capacity that can see the future, is it possible or is it just fake and all baloney?
No, it's possible. Sure. The mind is very powerful. And the mind can be trained to do anything. But this is all on a mental level. The mind can see all kinds of things, can become all kinds of things.
Are you saying then that whatever is foreseen like that is still part of Maya or the illusion?
Of course, certainly.
So anything that someone predicts about the physical world would still be false?
Yes.
Even if it came to, quote, true?
Of course. Because you have to take everything that comes with it. There's no such thing in this world as perfection. There's no one who lives a perfect life in this world. There's no perfect condition where everything goes your way and you're living in heaven. This is for children. It does not exist. The way the world works is karmically. You achieve the things that you're achieving because in the past life you have earned these things. But when that karma is finished, you keep going in a different direction. is like a pendulum. The pendulum swings in one direction, then has to go back to the other direction. This is duality. So you have good karma, and you come into this world a multi-millionaire, where we have no financial problems. But then there is sickness. There are people who kidnap you, kill you. All kinds of things can happen, which is also your karma. Everything is karmic. What I'm trying to say is if you play with the world, you'll always be disappointed. The world can never give you eternal peace, eternal happiness, eternal joy. It is only when you transmute and transcend this world that you will have permanent peace and permanent joy.
Karma was happening to an individual. If something bad happens to me tomorrow, it's something I, Fred Brownell, did 200 years ago. My thought was that karma is the effect and has a cause in so-called time, but in other words, if something bad happens, I'm not, I, Fred Brownell, am not being punished, or if something good happens, I'm not being rewarded. It's just something that happens. In other words, the number of people on Earth is always growing. So, where do the new people come from if karma is happening to only people who lived before? Kind of confusing.
When you think of karma, it becomes very confusing when you think of the ways and means of karma that works. Before, you have lived many lives.
I have, or lives have been lived.
Lives have been lived. And truth is that it exists. In reality, there's no such thing. The more you think about these things, the more you get involved in these things. You can't believe yourself when you think about past lives. But as you believe yourself as a human being, then karma does exist. This is why I say to you, do not look at yourself as a human being. Do not see yourself as mortal. For if you do, you've got to deal with karma. But in truth, there is no karma, there's no mortal being. Therefore, the things that happen to you in your life, do not question it too much, drop it. That's why we had this lesson when I told you to drop it. There are yoga groups and spiritual groups who become so involved in karma that that's what they always talk about and that's all they talk about. This is my karma. I'm going through my karma. This becomes your master and keeps you back. This is another form of Maya, the grand illusion. Karma is part of the grand illusion. So, when something happens to you that you don't like, even though it may be karmic, and then go into the details of it, just drop it. In other words, take your mind off the condition any way that you can. Lift up your mind to a higher plateau, to a higher level, by starting to realize the self, by questioning to whom has this condition come, who feels this, I do, who am I? So do not dwell on karma too long. Drop it.
Drop it. Anything in duality. Drop everything.
Drop everything, exactly. Especially karma.
So Robert, when you say dropping is like not letting your mind take you anywhere, no matter what it comes up with, no matter what it sees outside of yourself, whatever condition or effects or whatever's happening. What you said before is that it's all in your own mind. What you see out there is all in your own mind. It's all your perception. It may not be that way. That's the way you see it. And I'm creating this. I'm still caught up in the mind, and I'm trying to separate myself from my own conditioning, my own perception of the way I see everything. And it's most of the time, it's not even the way I see it. I mean, I'm trapped in my own thinking, as far as the mind goes, and I feel that just acknowledging that the fact of asking who it is been a lot of freedom for me. You know, I mean, I can really rise above things that have happened to me or whatever my mind is thinking and sort of drop it.
That's a good point.
In other words, there's really nothing happening outside of myself.
Right. Exactly. Right?
It's all in my head. It's all my own conditioning of thoughts.
Exactly. Stop the mind as fast as you can. When the mind begins to think about your life, about situations, about conditions, try to catch it. Do not allow it to carry on. Drop it immediately.
I have one other question. On Sunday I quoted a little thing in Buddhist scripture which I thought was apropos. And you asked me if I realized it. I think that was your question. And it's not clear in my mind what you were asking me after I made that quote. I didn't understand your question.
So what's the question?
What was your question?
Come on, boys.
You tell me your question.
No, I made a mistake. You asked me something. I don't know what it was.
You expect me to remember what you asked me?
No, but I can give the quotation again.
I bet you can.
I don't know.
The second verse same as the first.
Go ahead, Fred. What's the question?
What was the quotation?
My question is, what was your question?
What was the quotation?
You want the quote?
The quote.
Yes or no?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Buddhist scripture. By oneself the evil is done. By oneself one suffers. By oneself the evil is left undone. By oneself one is purified. The pure and the impure stand and fall by themselves. No one can purify another. And you asked me something. I don't know what it was, or at least...
That's a good quote. I agree with it.
You agree with the quote?
Yeah.
That's good. Well, let's leave it.
Hallelujah. Pretty good source. Was it the Buddha, huh?
That's a good, it's a good source.
Yes. Why argue with the Buddha?
Yeah.
Well, you've been saying part of sunk a lot of that this evening.
I just read something Einstein said, whatever that's worth, and he said, I can't quote it like Fred can, but it was something in the sense of the field and matter, and the field is the only reality, which is what you're saying with the paper and the print.
When we go beyond the field, what is the source of the field? He was talking of the field of energy. He said, where did the field of energy come from? It came from your mind. From Einstein's mind. We have to go beyond that. Beyond everything.
I felt like the field was God's.
It could be a baseball field.
Robert, talking about the Buddha earlier, the Buddha said that finally just said, well, it's up to everybody to work out their own salvation. Seems, you know, judging on my experience here this last week, I'd be in pretty bad shape. It seems that the only assessment I can really draw for myself is that I'm just a reaction machine. This is about not reacting is really beyond me. I think that I used to feel much more detached years ago than I do now. With all this studying and going to seminars and talks and everything, it seems that it's gotten much worse.
Sure, because you're going into all kinds of teachings. Make it simple for yourself. Do one teaching. Empty the mind. That's all you have to do. When the mind is empty, you will be yourself.
That's what I find difficult. Because it's not, you know, now it's easy. But, you know, if you go about your business during the week, you seem to get pummeled by the world out there.
This is where self-inquiry comes in. Remember to ask a question. Who's getting fumbled? To whom does the world come? And realize it comes to I. The personal I who feels this. And you are not that I at all. You are the source of the I. Remember to do this during the day. During waking hours, during sleeping hours. Just practice this alone. And we'll take you home. Do not make it complicated. Simply realize you have to empty the mind completely and totally, and you will be free. You empty the mind by inquiring, to whom does the mind come? As you persevere, as you do this gently, easily, without strain, you will go deeper and deeper and deeper until one day you'll be free. But many people have so many teachings that they're into, it becomes very confusing. We don't know what teaching to follow. You've read so many books, heard so many teachers, been to so many classes, that you want to give up the whole thing. And I don't blame you. There's really no teaching. There's no teacher, there's no teaching. Keep your life simple. Do not allow your mind to run away and tell you all kinds of things. Grab your mind and bring it back to the source.
I wondered about a contrast between the waking state and the dream state. In the waking state, I have an idea that what I do or say may have an effect on what happens, and that I should be able to control things. But in the dream state, I don't recall in a dream having that idea that I should be able to control anything that happens to me in the dream. In other words, there's less or no ego in the dream state, whereas in the waking state, I think I should be able to control things.
Perhaps in the dream state, you then evolve so far to be able to think about controlling things.
I'm sorry.
In the dream state, perhaps you have then evolved to the point where you're able to be able to control the mind or to practice self-inquiry to do anything. Because in the dream state, perhaps you're just a human being like everybody else. And then come upon teachings that have told you how to control the mind. So you do not do this in the dream state. Just like many years ago in this state, in the waking state, so-called. You were not involved in teachings. You were just a human being going about your business. So also in the dream state, you are a human being going about your business. You're not getting to the point in the dream state when you have a teaching or when you practice any type of sadhana. That's all.
But would that be less evolved or maybe more evolved? Because it seems that we're less evolved when we get so caught up in the mind.
It depends what's going on here.
I'm sorry.
Both of them are false. The dream state and the waking state are both false.
It just seems that, if I interpreted what Fred was saying, it seems things happen more spontaneously in the dream state, and this seems to me, more pure or spiritually evolved than when we're constantly thinking about it.
Not really, because what you're doing in the dream state is the same as what you were doing when you were, say, a little girl. You're just going about your business, having different experiences, and you never even thought about the mind or controlling the mind. But there has to come a time in your life as you grow spiritually, when you begin to see that you have to control your mind completely and transcend the mind and go through these experiences that you're going through now to get it happening to you. But in the dream state, perhaps you've not reached that as yet. So you're just having physical, material experiences in the dream state.
But didn't Christ say to become as little children? Isn't that somewhat what he was referring to? It seems to me like the more we think, even about controlling the mind, the more we're caught up in Maya, rather than the spontaneity of a child.
If you can have the spontaneity of a child, and awaken that way, that's great. But how many people can do this? Therefore, the teaching of self-inquiry was given to grown-ups when they're no longer a child and they've lost their spontaneity, to be able to go back again and become like little children.
There's no real reason to fret about either one.
No. Because they're both false. The dream state is false, the waking state is false. One may be advanced, one may not be advanced. Do you know, people have high spiritual dreams? And the people have average dreams? Just like the waking state. In the waking state, do people have high spiritual practices? Do people who do not have any spiritual practices? Do all kinds of people go through all kinds of experiences? In the dream state and in the waking state. But they're both false. Om Shanti, 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 Om Peace.